Hello, everyone. For her holiday special, Eugenie has asked me to create a new update on the interview we did on February 20th, 23. This podcast is about the latest exciting scientific research that's filling in all the fine details of exactly how homeopathic remedies do their magic. I'm Judy Ann McNamara, the founder of MISH, the Montreal Institute of Classical Homeopathy. MISH is an international school of leading-edge holistic homeopathy that has been in operation since 2005. Our website is MISH Montreal, all in one word, .com. You'll find interesting blog articles. You can subscribe to our newsletter or email us at info@michmontreal.com or follow us on Instagram. What distinguishes our school, our teachings, and our approach is a holistic psycho-bioenergetic understanding of life, health, and homeopathy. As a graduate of quantum and biophysics, I had come to an understanding of exactly how the homeopathic remedy works, which is now supported by current leading-edge research, which I want to share with you today. My teaching team and I have also developed a methodology for case taking and prescribing based on this leading edge understanding. And I'll talk a little bit about that as well. So let's dive in. Have you ever wondered exactly how the homeopathic remedy can cause an almost instantaneous whole body mind response? If you've ever given homeopathic chamomilla to a screaming, teething baby and seen its instant transformation to a quiet, calm baby, or how quickly a bee sting pales and stops itching with homeopathic aphids, then you've witnessed what really appears to be magical. And it's usually after we've seen such a response to homeopathic remedy that we become fascinated with homeopathy. Unfortunately, it's the same magical aspect that causes questioning and skepticism that often results in the false conclusion that homeopathy is a placebo. People imagine it's a placebo because they have no other plausible, scientifically based explanation of the rapid, effective, whole organism effects that homeopathy has. But Dr. Hahnemann himself was very clear about how it works. In all of his examples, Hahnemann uses field effects, both magnetic and gravitational, to illustrate the action of his remedies. And even though Dr. Hahnemann was also a chemist, he purposely did not explain the action of homeopathic remedies chemically. He chose the very new, because we're talking over 2 centuries ago, and barely explored domain of electromagnetics to explain his dynamically acting medicines. As he says in Aphorism 11, obviously, this does not happen through material instruments, nor through mechanical arrangements. In the same Aphorism 11 of his Organon of Medical Art, he compares the action of the remedy as utterly non-material, non-mechanical, as the power of a bar magnet when it forcibly attracts a piece of iron or steel lying next to it. In Aphorism 10, he uses the word dynamic to describe how the remedy influences the life force energetically by again using the example of a magnet. In the footnote of Aphorism 11, when Hahnemann asks, "What is a dynamic influence or dynamic power?" he uses the only example of a physical field effect that could be observable at his time. The invisible force of our earth conducts its moon around itself, he wrote, and the moon raises our northern seas to flood tide at set hours. We see this and we are amazed because our senses do not perceive how this happens. So in that same aphorism, Hahnemann describes the vital force or life principle as a power vesen, invisible in itself, only discernible by its effects via the organism. The only way to measure a field today is by its effects. By definition, you cannot measure a field directly. the definition of the word field, as it's used in physics, is something beyond the physical, something invisible, and observable only through the behavior of an object under its influence. Exactly what Hahnemann described. So it's amazing to me as a physicist that Hahnemann understood the remedy's action as a field effect. It's clear through his personal provings of electricity and magnetism, he did both the North and South Pole, that he was fascinated by and saw the enormous potential of this new dimension of reality. So much so that he devoted an entire chapter in the Organon, chapter 12, to the dynamic power of magnets, electricity, and magnetism. His experience and observations led him to recognize the psychobioenergetic nature of the living body and the energetic nature of homeopathic remedies. He even described and provided instructions in aphorisms 288 to 290 of the Organon around how to apply energy therapies, or what we call hands-on energetic work. So Hahnemann was clear that the homeopathic remedy acts like a field, and he knew about the vital field, or biofield as we call it today. The underlying energetic field that drives and creates all the chemical physiological processes in our body is the biofield, or the vital force, as he called it. The problem was, is that he said that a century before the development of field physics, and it's taken us another 100 years to recognize the electromagnetic field dimension of the living organism. So Hahnemann, when describing the vital force or vital field, as we would understand it today, knew it to be the directive energy driving all the functions, mental and physical, of the whole organism as a totality, one whole. And we spent almost 2 centuries analyzing and taking the living organism apart into pieces. And we're only now being forced to consider a holistic perspective in relationship to life. Current research is necessitating a holistic approach by giving rise to a new field called psychobioenergetics. So this new research is helping us put together the pieces to recognize that there's an energetic dimension that underlies, informs, and directs the functionings of the cells, the organs, and the body as a whole. We have started to measure the electromagnetic field of the heart and of the brain. And there's research groups such as the Imaging the Biofield Initiative who are exploring the field characteristics of the body. They're providing an understanding of the importance of biophotons as the basis of whole body communication. Biophotons are an electromagnetic field. The brain and the nervous system are driven by electromagnetic waves that carry neurotransmitters across nerve synapses so that nerves can connect, communicate, and process information. We're finally coming to recognize that the living organism is not just a collection of cells, a vat of chemicals, or a machine, but an intelligent, field-orchestrated, psycho-energetic whole. What we are recognizing is that the chemical mechanical model that we've been holding of life and the human being is too limited. That's what's necessitating the emergence of this new psychobioenergetic medical model. A new model based on whole body responses, or what we call holisms, not chemical mechanisms, and includes the concepts of consciousness, energy, and subjectivity. So let's get back to what Hahnemann was saying. So there's soon-to-be-published research that vindicates Hahnemann, that demonstrates that the homeopathic remedy has distinctive field properties that can be measured independently of the carrier it is in, be it water or sugar. The remedy action is a holism, not a mechanism, because it's in the form of a field effect. Thus, it affects the entire vital force, or what we call the vital field, at once. There's already been tons of research revealing that the homeopathic remedies cause epigenetic changes in cell genomes, changes that are specific to each remedy, even to different dilutions of the same remedy. Researcher members of the International Research Group on Very Low Dose and High Dilution Effects, also known as GIRI, Le Groupe International de Recherche sur l'Infinitésimale, who published the International Journal of High Dilution Research, have shown that a single remedy can produce over 100 changes to the genome. Now, this is really fantastic. But again, how does it do that? That's what remains the question. They're asking what the mechanism is, or what is the holism? How do the cells pick up the field signals of the remedy and make these changes happen? So let's start with this question and first look at what kind of receptor would be required for the field effect of the homeopathic remedy to be picked up and responded to and create epigenetic changes. What are the qualifications of that receptor? Firstly, whatever receptor of the homeopathic remedy's energetic signal would also have to have a role in creating epigenetic changes. The receptor would need to possess the capacity to process information, possess the intelligence if we want to decode the signal that the homeopathic remedy carries as a field effect. That means that the receptors would have to display responses to low electromagnetic signals. In other words, they would have to be able to emit and capture biophotons, for example, and perform quantum processes. And these receptors would have to be present throughout the body, in every cell, and especially in nerve cells. Hahnemann was specific about having the remedy come into contact with as many nerve endings as possible, which is why we have better results when we hold the remedy under our palm. They would have to form a type of biological system that allows the remedy to affect the cells of the entire body at once, a kind of sub-energetic intelligent network. And as I said, the receptor cannot be a solely extracellular structure, nor an organ system like the blood or lymph, because in vitro research with homeopathy has shown that our remedies can affect individual cells and cell lines. Therefore, as well as being outside every cell, interconnecting individual cells, it must also reside inside every individual cell. And because the remedy changes mind and emotions, it must also underlie psychological states. Research has provided the answer. The receptor of the homeopathic signal is the mitochondria. In an article published in 2022 in the journal Biochemistry, Dr. Martin Picard, a leading researcher at Columbia University, explains how emerging evidence positions energy as the substrate of the mind-body connection, linking the molecular processes in the organism and the subjective experiences in our mind through the confluence point of the mitochondria. What we have always known is that the mitochondria are the mediators of bioenergy. They transform the food produced by chloroplasts in plants. Chloroplasts, as you know, perform the quantum process of capturing and transforming light energy into food matter. The mitochondria perform the reverse quantum process of transforming food matter into the bioenergy necessary for all cellular and physiological functions. We know now that mitochondria are also the producers of biophotons, forming an intelligent network of communication throughout the body. They also form an intelligent network of dynamic synapsing filaments around every nucleus, and in fact control the cell nucleus. These synapsing filaments act exactly like the nerves in our brain and process information. It's the mitochondria that determine all epigenetic changes. They are in every cell, but as I mentioned, they also form a network throughout the body. What's now known as the mitochondrial information processing system, MIPS. This system of mitochondria receives and generates metabolic, biochemical, neuroendocrine, and other signals that enhance adaptation and sustain health. Mitochondria sense and respond to endogenous and environmental inputs. They integrate that information through dynamic, network-based physical interactions and diffusion mechanisms. And they also produce output signals that tune the functions of other organelles and systemically regulate all of our physiology. The mitochondria integrate every minutia of the organism's psychophysiological data in order to determine the optimal cellular response to the environment. Mitochondria are explicitly responsible for hormone production, hypothalamic, pituitary, adrenal axis responses, sympathetic adrenal medullary activation, and catecholamine levels, as well as the inflammatory cytokine IL-6, circulating metabolites, and hippocampal gene expression responses to stress. The list can go on and on. What makes mitochondria important for homeopathy is that they function on the same dimension as homeopathy, a dynamic, energetic dimension deeper than that of the superficial biochemical processes. Mitochondria are, in fact, small quantum computers within every cell of the body, quantum computers that also determine energy flow. The mitochondria form an energy-sensitive, interconnected network throughout the body, guiding the body's functions and responses in every microsecond of life. The energy configuration that underlies all physiological functions, what homeopaths call the vital force or vital field, is configured and maintained by the mitochondria. They're the only organelles that we know of that would be capable of intercepting, interpreting, and acting on the homeopathic signal. And if you want to see what they look like, you can watch the video podcast that Eugenie made with me on February 20th, 2023 on Eugenie's YouTube channel. So let's recap. We now have evidence of the field effects of the remedies. We now know through hundreds of experiments that the remedies cause specific epigenetic changes. And we now know that it is the mitochondria that cause those changes. So how it works is that the signal of the homeopathic remedy, as a field effect, gets picked up by the mitochondria of the nerves in your mouth or whatever part it's in touch with. The mitochondria, as an interconnected, dynamic, extracellular and intracellular network, process the information in the remedy signal at a quantum speed and create epigenetic changes in the cell nucleus, as well as coordinate changes throughout the body, both energetically and chemically. Okay, so now the obvious next question for every homeopath is, how can we find the homeopathic remedy that is going to talk to the mitochondria and bring about the changes required for healing to occur? In other words, what is the key to finding the homeopathic similum that's going to speak to the mitochondria? So for that answer, we need to look at another important, relatively recent research discovery around dysfunctional mitochondria. Dysfunctional mitochondria are what cause all the symptoms of a disease, or what we call the pathophysiology. Mitochondria cause pathophysiology via multiple mechanisms, including changes in the gene expression and the epigenome, alterations of the brain structure and functions, abnormal stress activity, inflammation, and signaling that activates cell death and promotes cellular, tissue, and organ aging. So it was the world's leading stress researcher, Dr. Bruce McEwen, and Dr. Martin Piccard, the leading mitochondrial researcher at Columbia University, who I mentioned earlier, who discovered that there is a point at which the mitochondria begin to create disease. And that point is called mitochondrial allostatic load, or MAL. Allostatic load is related to how much stress is being experienced. Stress is related to adaptation. The mitochondria decide when you've reached the maximum threshold of your physical or psychological stress, and they make you do something differently to adapt. The mitochondria are the mediators for all adaptation, including all of our fight or flight responses. So what the researchers discovered is that what affects mitochondria the most and causes them to turn on fight or flight responses is stress. And most importantly and significantly, psychological stress. Psychological stress, also called perceived or imagined stress, produces the same physiological responses of fight or flight, stress hormones, cytokines, as the stress caused by an actual physical situation, like the stress you would experience if you saw a truck speed towards you while you were crossing the street. Well, at least initially, they're the same. The difference is that after the actual physical stressor is over, when you get safely to the other side of the street, the body eventually returns to a relaxed state and your biomarkers return to normal. So a bit of stress through exercise, physical stress, is very good for you. Physical stress keeps the mitochondria healthy. All movement does. But psychological stress is different, such as getting asked to testify in court or being told that you'd be judged in some way. When we perceive that something could be threatening to what we identify with, what we own, to any part of our sense of self, our image, what people think of us, it makes us nervous and anxious. It stresses us. Psychological stress depends a lot on how we perceive a situation or our environment. For example, if we think our boss is looking for reasons to fire us and we want to keep our job, we will perceive her bad mood or her furrowed brow or sharp comment as threatening to our status quo. And that's going to create stress and add to the mitochondrial allostatic load. So unlike physical exercise or physical dangers, in psychological or perceived stress, the biomarkers stay high and the individual's stress levels gradually continue to increase. The stress levels that rise due to a perceived situation never go away. This form of stress is insidious because our organism automatically adapts to new thresholds of stress, making us totally unaware of the possible effects the stress is having on us. In other words, people go through their lives without realizing that there are stress signals coursing through their body. It's become their new normal. So psychological stress, we now know, is the most important precursor to disease. In industrialized areas, stress is the most important factor in the development of chronic disease in an individual. Psychosocial stressors and related emotional states lead to mitochondrial allostatic load, which in turn leads to disease. So what I'm saying is, in order to talk to the mitochondria, you have to know the language of stress. You have to discover the unique type of fight or flight and survival responses that are occurring in an individual. For almost 20 years at MISH, the Montreal Institute of Classical Homeopathy, we've been developing the MISH method, a comprehensive approach to holistic diagnosis and treatment based on an optimal communication with the mitochondria. And central to our MISH method is pneumodynamic dialogue case taking. It's a homeopathic inquiry that explores the possible routes of perceived stress, different for every individual. What I find stressful and how I react to what I perceive as stressful will be very different from what you might experience. Whatever I perceive as stressful is also what I will be susceptible to. What determines what I'm susceptible to or affected by or stressed by is whatever my ideals are. We each strive to display some ideal, some form of perfection, strength, power, knowledge, intelligence, love, wisdom, beauty, goodness, or courage. Something that we've idealized and that we strive to show, strive to attain. And that's what we're susceptible to. Susceptibility is important. According to the esteemed Dr. Stuart Close, who wrote The Genius of Homeopathy in 1812, it's the unique and essential susceptibility that must be addressed for cure to ensue. And susceptibility is based on this unconscious striving. So our unconscious ideal or striving is what the whole sense of self, the idea of the individual, is based on. Thus, the whole organism is highly attuned to, in other words, highly susceptible to, anything that can possibly symbolize a threat, or on the opposite too, possibly support that striving or ideal. Exploring that ideal or unconscious striving will lead us to the associated stress responses, compensations, and sensations associated with specific reactions, and all of the symptoms that are the direct result of the mitochondrial allostatic load. We need to get a dynamic picture of the patient's subjective experience, and that is the common thread running through the significant mental and physical symptoms, the dreams, the desires, the aversions, the delusions, and the sensations. And through the inquiry, the patient is empowered with a deep understanding of their condition and the factors that contribute to it. They go away from the inquiry much better informed. So this dynamic picture is the whole picture that can now be matched to a remedy that resonates with the stress and the related flight or fight survival mechanisms and the flavor of susceptibility. We are talking mitochondria's language. Okay, so I imagine that now you have the question, well, how do we get the whole picture of a remedy? Well, we can get it through the provings, but not the provings as a jumble of symptoms. We need to understand that the proving is the subjective experience of the remedy source, be it a bee, fish, or tree, from the subjective experience of that mineral, plant, or animal. The results of a homeopathic proving, on which our materia medica is based, are rarely objective observations. The subtle changes that occur during a proving are almost entirely subjective experiences. Only the prover can describe the changes explicitly. And the changes coincide with a uniquely subjective experience from the perspective of the remedy source. And that is how we must understand our remedies. We cannot know the remedy by just looking at the material, the plant or animal that the energetic signal is made from. The homeopathic energetic signal holds the essence of that mineral, plant, or animal. If we look at a proving as a subjective experience of that thing, then we get a subjective understanding that we can match to the subjective experience of our patient. We can understand the remedy in the same way that we understand the patient. We can find that red thread that runs through all of the different symptoms, mind, body, emotions. So homeopathy is an objective and a subjective science with the emphasis on subjectivity. Critical subjectivity was first described by Johann Wolfgang von Goethe when he started feeling in the 1800s that science was becoming too analytical. Already he saw the shortcomings of objective, quote-unquote, science in relationship to living things, where there are dimensions of existence in living beings that cannot begin to that we cannot begin to know through strictly objective observation. So, as I mentioned before, research is quickly outgrowing the strictly analytical, objective, scientific methods that it's been using. Purely objective science, if there were such a thing, focuses on parts and splitting wholes into parts. This leads to analytical error and oversight. Analytical, objective science mistakenly considers the role of the immaterial dimension, that sub-energetic and field dimensions that we've been talking about, as well as consciousness. The objective science sees this immaterial dimension as artifacts, sees consciousness as an artifact, rather than the very essence of the formative forces of creation. Mind and consciousness have been ignored too long in medical research, but things are changing. Subjective science is how the physicist Dr. David Bohm obtained a direct perception of the inner nature of gyroscopic motion. Bohm imagined himself as a gyroscope. The formulae and the mathematics would come later as a formal way of explaining his insight. When he met Einstein, he learned that Einstein came to his insights in the same way, through his own subjective experience of light. It's all about the patient's experience, in the patient's words. Again, research reveals that patient self-rated health is the single best predictor of how well someone will do and how long they will live over the next 20 to 30 years, more than any kind of laboratory test. So, consciousness, mind, subjective experience, self-perception, stress, susceptibility, are directly related to the energetic configuration maintained by the mitochondria. And that is the dimension on which homeopathy works. So what I've tried to explain today is that leading edge research and the rapidly emerging psychobioenergetic medical model is providing the necessary and long-awaited context and understanding and language for understanding how homeopathy works. Science has finally caught up with Hahnemann's genius. So this is going to be the golden age of homeopathy. So thank you for listening. Wishing you all the best for the holiday season and the new year. And if you'd like to experience or know more about what a case sounds like, looks like using our method, Adam Fuhr, who is a Amish homeopath, graduate, naturopath, and our clinical supervisor and a teacher at our school, has also recorded a sample case, a pediatrics case, that I'm sure you will find very informative and very interesting. So take a look for it a little later in this podcast. So thank you very much for your attention. All the best.